Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Productivity Mastery. A very special episode, episode 180. So it means there's 179 more episodes. One of my favorite episodes today is the episode with my guest today, who's coming back, Winston Ben Clements. My man, how are you doing today?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me back. It's been a few years since we spoke.
Crazy, huh? It's like it's been yesterday, man.
Yeah, as we were saying, it was just before the pandemic, so it feels like even the whole world has changed since we last spoke.
Absolutely, man. And look, it's been a long time since I had you on the pod. By the way, for those listening, my neighbors, I'm recording this episode from home, my neighbors just decided that they have to drill and start drilling. So if you hear some drilling sounds, it's not coming from Winston, it's coming from me. But you got to take full ownership, man. You know, we committed to do the podcast now. I'm going to do That's the podcast. It. So let's hope that they'll finish soon. But hey, Winston, give me a bit of an overview, and for the audience, for the people listening, tell me a bit about your story, about your background, about your upbringing, so we can get a context, and then we can start talking about ownership and a life of no excuses.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe the most interesting, or maybe the most unique part of my story is that I was born with a condition known as brittle bones disorder, and that condition means that when you see me, I don't think we've actually met in person yet, Stoyan, but you've seen me on video and you've seen images. And probably one of the first things that you notice is that I'm a little bit smaller than the average person. So I'm probably about 3 feet tall, and I use a wheelchair for my mobility. And so I tend to have that, you know, confusion when people meet me sometimes is he a grown up? Is he a child? You know, how should I approach him? Because it's clear that he's got some kind of disability going on here. And so, you know, that condition is something that I was born with. It means that my bones would fracture more easier than the average person. So, of course, I wanted to do all the things that the other kids were doing when I was growing up. I wanted to, you know, play sports and, you know, run around and push and do everything that children do. But the difference was when they fell over, they could just dust themselves off and carry on. When I fell over, it probably mean like a broken arm or a broken leg. So that's how the condition played out for me. But what I always say is that I was also born into, I won the family lottery, because I was born into a family that were very, very well equipped to not just support me, but also push me out of my comfort zone. So they would say things like, hey, you know what, if you want to play football, I mean, you're in a wheelchair, but either if you want to play football, then, you know, you go there, go to the playground and figure it out. And so that would sometimes look like, okay, going to the playground and realizing, of course, I'm not going to become the next Cristiano Ronaldo, but maybe I could be the referee. Maybe I could blow the whistle and call the fouls and still be involved in something that I love, but in my own unique and creative way. And I think some of that mindset is what I've carried into, I guess, being an adult now. I'm an adult now. And into, you know, I guess my corporate career, where I worked in technology for about 10 years. And then I did a big pivot, which I'm sure we'll talk about, into doing more diversity and inclusion work and doing speaking and content creation. So I've always had that ability from a young age to just try something and see if I can deliver it in my own unique way.
So you mentioned it was very easy for you to break a bone, and you actually, maybe because of this adventurous spirit of yours, ended up breaking a lot of bones I remember last time you mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, that you probably broke around 150 bones since you were 12 or something like that.
Yeah, up to age 12, probably 150. And then the number went down, I guess, dramatically because I became an adult, became more careful, more aware, you know, that maybe I shouldn't be trying to do a bungee jump or something like that, with my condition. So up to age 12, it was about 150. I'd say in total, up to now, and I'm in my 30s now, it's probably about 200 lifetime fractures.
Man, how did you deal with that? Everybody listening could probably have experienced breaking a bone, and everybody can feel, even when I'm speaking about it, that it's a painful, physically painful experience, but also it's mentally and emotionally challenging as well. How did you deal with this constant, pain?
Yeah, honestly, it was quite tricky. So, and I would say, yeah, for many people who've broken a bone, you'll appreciate that, you know, when if you break an arm story, you really can't use that arm for about a month to 6 weeks. And so for me, I think even bigger than the actual physical pain of the bone, I guess, healing again, it was more because I have this spirit of wanting to be adventurous, wanting to be creative, wanting to be independent. I prefer when I can do things myself rather than somebody helping me. And so for me, that part was even bigger than, you know, having to have my arm in a sling for 6 weeks. And so, you know, again, honestly, I did have my up and down days. Again, my family would still encourage me. They'd still say, you know, go to school. You know, you've got your arm in a sling, but we don't think you should stay at home. It's clear that you're frustrated staying at home and watching TV all day. So why don't you go to school and just, you know, even if you're not able to participate fully, at least just be there in that surrounding, learn something, see your friends. Because another thing that happened sometimes was, you know, I'd have these injuries and then I would just be at home by myself. You know, my sisters would go to school, my parents would go to work. So I'd just be at home, you know, either with like a nanny or a babysitter or someone who was looking after me. And then I would find myself going into a dark place mentally because I've got the whole day to think about everything that I'm missing out on. So I think that was something that really encouraged me, you know, having people to say, hey, you might not be 100%, but just go and show up at 50%. And it's something that I think is an important message for anyone listening to this right now. You know, there are those days, you know, for those of us who are entrepreneurs and building businesses, you know, it's not every day when, you know, you're crushing it. Some days you're showing up and, you know, you don't feel like showing up. You don't feel like waking up at 6 a.m. in the morning or tackling, you know, that big priority that you've been avoiding. So I think those types of lessons kind of helped me to transfer again into the other things that I did later in life.
That's super interesting, man. And just to give a bit of a hint to the audience, every time I have a conversation with you, and by the way, I feel like I'm a very positive and open-minded person, right? But every time I have a conversation with you, I feel like you have this abundance mindset. You take full ownership and you inspire me to step up my own game. How did you develop this type of mindset? Was that something you developed early on, thanks to the support of your parents and the mindset that they helped you to build? Or was that a conscious decision? Hey, I need to take ownership of my life. I need to make the most out of it.
Yeah, now and by the way, I'm not perfect with, you know, taking ownership. There are days when, you know, I wake up and I just want to complain about life or complain about something that did not work in my favor. And I can even tell you a quick story right now. You know, I was in a situation here where you know, I was living in an apartment with my family, and you know, we moved out of the apartment in December. And we always really take good care of our property where we live, make sure that the space is very well maintained. And, you know, we never had any issues with anywhere else that we lived before. So we move out, and 3 months later, we get presented with a lawsuit because I'm based in the US. So a sheriff came to my house, Doyen, and presented me with a lawsuit. And I was like, What's going on? And I open the lawsuit, and it's my previous landlord who's now saying that, that I punched holes in the walls and in the doors. I know, ridiculous, right? So me, with my brittle bones disorder, I was punching holes in the wall and in the doors. And obviously, that's extremely frustrating because that's somebody who obviously is very unethical and somebody who's trying to obviously benefit, in a way that is extremely unfair. So I remember when I received that lawsuit, I was complaining all day, Stoyan, to my wife. Even my wife was like, okay, let's stop talking about this now. But it was just so ridiculous that, the emotions got the better. So I just want to share that just to kind of phrase that, I'm not always perfect either. But yeah, like going back to your question, I think it's happened in different layers. So layer one, I would say, is what I've talked a little bit about already. So it was my home, I guess, network. So that was my parents and my sisters, cousins, the people that I grew up with, all having this idea that, hey, it looks like this kid, Winston, he wants to do something. He doesn't want to just, be protected and be, what do we say? We say like covered in cotton wool. He wants to just go out there and try things. So because he's showing us that, then we're just going to encourage him. If he wants to play, let him play. If he thinks he's the next Cristiano Ronaldo, let him go and do that, right? So that was kind of layer one. And then for me, layer two was actually going to school and then again, attracting the teachers, attracting the friends, attracting the people who saw the same thing in me and actually call that out of me. So, I always had teachers who would say, for example, I really enjoyed drawing in school. I consider myself to be a very good artist. And I think I was one of the best artists in my school, but I was very, very slow in my drawing. And so I had a teacher who would say, hey, your work is really good. So I'm going to give you extra time to just stay behind. I will sit with you. You can use all the equipment and, I'll be there for you so that we can get you delivering the amount of pictures, the amount of paintings that are needed to pass this exam, right? So again, that's someone who went out of their way to kind of make sure that I was able to perform at my level. And then I'll share one more. I guess what when I guess developed a little bit, left education. I guess managers similarly that I worked with in the corporate world, but the one that I want to talk about is mentors and coaches that I chose to work with later. So especially when I decided to leave the corporate world and kind of focus on business and entrepreneurship, I thought, okay, you know what? I've developed some pretty good ways of operating, but entrepreneurship will demand 10 times anything that I've ever needed to produce. So I need to actually invest in myself. I need to invest in coaching, invest in mentoring. And, I had some really good coaches and mentors who, basically called me on my own BS, even on those days when, again, I wasn't feeling 100%, or I was making excuses. Or, for example, like in this scenario, when I was having this lawsuit drama, that kind of mentor would be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you 10 minutes to just say everything that you need to say. And then we're going to move on and we're going to crush the goal that you're supposed to crush today. So yeah, I guess short answer, Stoyan, it's just been those layers of accountability at different stages of my life. And I feel like that's hopefully something that most people can tap into. You don't have to pay for coaching or you don't have to have the best relationship with your family, but it could be a friend, it could be a relative, a cousin, somebody. We all have that person who sees us for more than we are, right? Or more than we see ourselves. So just find that person and just align yourself to them, and that will impact how you show up in life.
Yeah, surround yourself with the people with the right mindset, the right frequency, those who that will support you, but not just cuddle you, but support you in terms of calling you on your BS when you have to. And the more you have this type of environment, the more likely you'll develop this type of mindset, right? Because you're constantly reinforced to be in a higher frequency. I love it, man. I love it. And I wonder if you can share some practical ideas to the people listening, those people who are listening and maybe struggle to see the glass half full. What would be some, you know, tools or practical suggestions you can offer?
Yeah. And, you know, we've all been in those situations where something happens and it just feels like it's the end of the world. I think for me, some of the practical things that have helped is, one is definitely perspective. So, you know, when something bad happens, so I'll use that lawsuit scenario again. When something bad happens, you know, I guess the emotional part of us wants to run away and create this picture that is so catastrophic, you know. Okay, so now you've got a lawsuit, you know, you're gonna have to pay lots of money, you know, it's gonna affect your finances, it's gonna affect your family, you know, you're gonna have to go to court, you know, it feels like you're in really, really big trouble, right? But when you actually have the right perspective, you can actually look at the thing and say, okay, this is a lawsuit, you know, I know, and I'm sure everyone watching this knows after I've shared my story that I did not punch holes in a wall, right? And so you can just look at that and say, okay, so what's the next right thing that I can do? The next right thing that I can do is it says on this piece of paper that I've got 30 days to respond. So I'm just going to respond and say why I don't think that this is a valid case, a valid lawsuit. And then we'll just take it from there. That's all I have to do today. Whereas, you know, in times when I haven't practiced that perspective, it would lead to this scenario where, you know, you can't even do anything. You kind of freeze, right? And you're just thinking about the scenario, you're complaining about it, you're talking negative, and that just invites more feelings, more frequencies of negativity. So I'd say perspective is a big, big thing. And then coming out of it with something that I call the next right thing. So what's the next right thing that you can do? And I feel like this is really applicable in all areas. Whether you're going through a business struggle, a relationship struggle, it could even be mental health, because I speak to a lot of men who have mental health struggles. And sometimes the next right thing you can do, Stoyan, is to just take a shower, right? Like, just get up in the morning, you feel like your mental health is not in a good place. So you have an option now. Do I just go back to bed and revisit everything over and over again? Or do I try and do the next right thing? So next right thing, it doesn't have to be a big, big thing, but it can create that momentum. Okay, I'm going to take a shower and see how I feel, right? So you take that shower and you're like, okay, cool. What's the next right thing after that? Okay, maybe I have something to eat, right? And actually, a lot of the time, by the time you have something to eat, you realize, oh, maybe I was just hungry. Maybe that was the issue, right? Maybe I'm not really stressed at all. So I think that next right thing approach, it's simple, but it's really served me to navigate seasons where I felt like I was becoming overwhelmed, or there was a lot of things going on, even with my health condition, right? What's the next right thing that I can do today? Okay, the next right thing that I can do today is, you know, just go to school and see if I feel okay to go to school. If I don't, I'll just stay home tomorrow, but I'm going to give it a go. So I think everyone is able to think of a next right thing action that is so simple, but often we don't do it when we're allowing our minds to take us in all directions.
That's a wonderful suggestion, man. I'm just thinking about it, and it kind of helps you to release the pressure.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my decision. I have to focus my full energy on the next right thing, as opposed to, you know, getting over and over, you know, overthinking in your head, oh, what should I do? Should I do this? Maybe like, and then you do nothing, right? So what's the next right thing I should do?
Yeah.
Then all your energy goes towards the next right thing, and you're feeling, I'm making progress.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's that whole idea of controlling the controllables, right? Because our mind wants to take us to the place of the uncontrollables that you can't influence. You know, I cannot influence, you know, who is going to be judging the case in my lawsuit. I can only influence what I have to do to respond to the lawsuit. So if you focus on those things that you can control, I think that definitely builds momentum, like you say, and then all of a sudden you're feeling accomplished, and the thing that felt that big earlier is now feeling much smaller.
One of the first things I do when I feel overwhelmed and stressed and I have a lot on my plate is I get a notebook or I open a Word file and I start journaling, and I'm exactly asking this question: what bothers me, what stresses me, what concerns me? And I just write anything that comes to my mind. And as you said, that's really helps me. Is I try to split all the answers into two columns. On the left side, I write down which of those things are within my control. And then on the right side, what are the things that are out of my control? And because I'm a very structured mathematical kind of person and I love spreadsheets, I would usually kind of for each of those things I can control, I'll be like, okay, what is the impact from 1 to 10? What is the kind of the impact? 10 is the highest, 1 is the lowest. Okay, good. Let me grade them. Great. Now, for the things that I can control, what could I do? If I'm to start resolving it, what could I do? And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. Well, I can call Winston. Winston, maybe. Okay, call Winston. I don't know what to do, but call Winston and try to figure it out. Okay, so I'll come up with a few actions, and then I look into the, okay, what are the things I cannot control? Okay, how can I see differently? How can I, what's good about it? Is there an opportunity hidden in this situation? Because I cannot control it. Can I stop worrying so much about something I have no control over? Like, just by this simple 15-minute journaling and organizing my thoughts, I'm like, okay, now I know what I should do and what are the things I should not worry about at all.
Yeah, no, I really like that exercise, and it's also reminded me of something else that I've done in the past, similar to journaling, like you shared, and kind of finding ways to understand your thought patterns, which is what you're describing. Another thing that I've done, not so much in writing, but I use like a voice note, Stoyan. And so in the voice note, I will say, okay, fine, let me allow my mind to run away for a second. And so I'm gonna voice the worst case scenario. I'm gonna say it out loud and record it. And so, worst case scenario could be, if you're going through, I don't know, some kind of business issue, maybe you didn't get this big project that you wanted to get, maybe it fell through, right? And so, okay, worst case scenario could be, okay, now the project has fallen through, I'm not gonna be able to pay my team, my team are gonna walk away, my business is gonna collapse, I will not be able to afford my rent. Me, my wife, and my child will get kicked out of our house. We're gonna be homeless, begging in the street. And so you just say all of these things out loud, and then I dare you to just replay that recording and hear how ridiculous it sounds.
I never thought about it, but that is so cool. This is such a
Go all the way to the end of that thought. Just go as negative as you can. Give yourself a full 3 minutes just to get it all out of your system, because that's what's happening in your subconscious. That's why you feel overwhelmed. So just get it out and then hear how incredibly silly it sounds when you say
I'm
it out
even
loud.
thinking that could be good to, everybody does it individually, and you get with a circle of good friends and everybody plays the recording.
Yeah, put it in the group chat with your friends.
Oh man, that's so good. That is so good. Yeah, a great tool. Great tool. But it's true, man. I was doing some research for our upcoming book. We're writing a book with Mike Holder, Cristobal Alonso. We write a book called "The Perform in Times of Crisis." So leadership in times of crisis. Very much focused on entrepreneurship and startup founders. How do you deal with that as a leader? And I was reading some articles about negative self-talk and how much more powerful it is, and how many, positive thoughts you have to create and generate to be able to outweigh all the one negative thought. Like how much more powerful is the negative self-talk, and also the percentage of negative self-talk we are having. I don't know who was that, the quote, you can probably help me out, but somebody said if somebody listens to our self-talk, everybody should be put into madness house.
Yeah, I've heard that before. And I've also heard the one that says 80% of the thoughts that we have are negative. I think we have something like almost 100,000 thoughts in a day or something like that. My numbers are probably completely wrong, but 80% of that huge number that pass through our mind are negative thoughts. And like you say, you have to work that much harder to amplify the 20%, and also your mind, because your brain is designed as a survival device. It just wants to make sure that you survive, which is why, you know, if you see something moving in the corner, like, you know, you quickly turn around, because your brain wants to make sure that, hey, there's not a predator, you know, in my house, even though it's very unlikely that there's going to be a predator in your apartment. But that's just how we are wired, to be hyper aware of potential dangers. And so now that you're having this huge number of crazy thoughts, it's very easy for your mind to just focus and stay there. And then you forget that, oh, okay, on that day when I lost the big project, I also got, you know, nominated for an award, or, you know, my child did really well in her, you know, maths paper, for example. I don't know. My child is 2 years old. She's not doing math yet. But you forget everything else that happened because you focus in that place where you focus on the darkness.
I'm always thinking and imagining, right? So what if you can choose how you act, and you can install in your system, let's say, you know, I don't like this 80% negative self-talk. I want to do it 20, and then just install a new software, right? Mm. How would your life quality change? Right? Because we want the negative self-talk. We don't want it to be 100% positive, because of course we want to be aware. Yeah. Of course we want to, but what is the percentage, right? And I'm just wondering how much your life quality is gonna, because you, I mean, let's be honest, we spend so much time with ourselves. Who is the person you spend most time with? Yourself. So if you don't master the self-talk, and I'm not saying you and me are, you know, like the masters of self-talk, like we're just talking about, right? But like, just imagine. What if you can take control?
Yeah, and exactly. And I think that's a big part of personal development, and even this conversation that we're having now, is how do we try and almost like override the default wiring of our brain and actually just turn the dial a little bit more to the positive and see what impact that has. And I think it's actually the same strategies that we mentioned a little bit already. So like the journaling, the doing the next right thing, the, you know, going to therapy. You know, I've tried therapy, you know, a few times now. I've been doing it since 2021 was the first time that I did it.
Just for the statistics, we had a conversation 2020. I don't know if that impacted your...
Yeah, so your conversation put me in therapy. But I thank you for that, because it was a very beneficial space where I learned a lot about myself and became even more self-aware. But yeah, it's those kind of...
You're welcome.
it's those practices that we keep hearing about, but sometimes it just sounds like noise. But you just have to find something that works for you. Not everyone gets the full benefit out of therapy. Some people go to therapy and they're like, no, not for me. Something that is specific to myself that is really, really simple also is I have something called, and this was inspired by one of my mentors who actually passed away a few years ago, but he inspired something called a When Life Works list. So all that is just like a list of, it can be any number, 10, 20 things that just make you feel good instantly. So for me, it could be things like, you know, I like getting a haircut. The day I get a haircut, I feel really good. I feel like I'm ready, you know, to model New York Fashion Week, you know, like call me. I'm ready. And you know, it's something that I wasn't really aware of until I started making that list. You know, another maybe weird thing is I really like when my car is clean. So like when I take my car to like, you know, to the valet and you know, they hoover and they clean and my car's all shiny and looking brand new again. That makes me feel really, really good. And so you have like things that are very specific to you, like those are very specific to me. And then when you're in that situation when, you know, I don't know, you get a lawsuit, let's say somebody gets a lawsuit. And you can kind of go back to that, you know, when life works list and be like, okay, I've got an opportunity. I could carry on complaining about this to my wife for, you know, an hour, 2 hours, or I haven't had a haircut in a while. Let me go get a haircut, right? And see what that does for my self-esteem, or if it gives me some momentum, or just kind of pulls me away a little bit from that negative thought pattern and starts rewiring my mind, like we were talking about.
Right, you're breaking the pattern.
Yeah.
You're immediately showing to yourself, I care for you. You deserve it. You're abundant.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, there's something, I think that's a good point. There's something about compassion there as well, right? Self-compassion and actually saying, hey, it's like when you fall over or when you hurt yourself and you're a child and you know your parent or whoever's looking after you comes and they just hold you, like they can't make the pain stop, but they just hold you and say, hey, it's gonna be all right. They wipe your tears away, you know, whatever. And it's just that compassion that we also need to learn to extend to ourselves, if that makes sense. And so that for me, that's what the when life works list, that's what it becomes for me.
I see it like a muscle, like literally similar to exercising, going to the gym, like physical exercise, right? I see this as a mental exercise. You are biologically wired to seek the negative and to seek for any potential threat, and so you can survive. However, you can train your mind, you can train yourself to act differently. I mean, emotions, thoughts, feelings, all these things are some sort of signals, if you think about it. I mean, any emotion that comes to you, it serves a purpose. Fear, okay, there's a purpose in fear, right? You know, danger. It could be potential danger. Doesn't mean danger. There could be potential danger. You know, jealousy, anger, all these emotions serve a purpose. The question is, how much time do you spend in them? And I think for me, it's always, I'm a mathematician. I'm gonna, you know, you keep going with the lawsuit. I keep going with my mathematical brain. But it's like, I come from mathematics, man. You know, it's for me, it's like, how can you maximize and optimize the model? You know, how do I spend the least time in negative energy and only use the negative emotions when I need them, when they need to give me a signal? It was a huge eye-opener for me when I attended the 10-day silent retreat called Vipassana. Have you done one of these yourself?
No, I haven't. I think I read one of your posts where you mentioned it.
Well, many people have done it these days. It's quite popular, and you can pretty much sign up anywhere across the world. Now, it's not about the silence. You know, silence is part of it, but it's the teachings that you learn there, and the technique, the meditation technique. I cannot give you the wisdom for 25 centuries and you know, the 10 days I experienced myself, but I can give you a couple of things from there. The main purpose, one of the main purposes of the technique that they teach you, is to decrease the time in which you're not aware. So basically, an emotion, a thought, a feeling comes to you. So you immediately get aware and bounce back to a place of equanimity or calmness.
Got it.
And that's the purpose. It's not that, you know, sometimes it's not going to be immediately, right? I mean, it might be 2 hours, might be a day. You're thinking about the lawsuit. But it's like, if it was a day last week, could it be 6 hours next week? Like, how can you be faster in getting control over your emotions and negative self-talk so you can you can bounce back to a more productive place. Because at the end of the day, yes, events are happening, and some events you cannot control and you cannot even influence them. What you can do, though, is to manage yourself better.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's again, and I really like the idea of actually just going somewhere where you can actually focus only on your thoughts, because, you know, we say our thoughts are like really important because they translate into our actions and our behaviors. But I think there's not many people who are taking the step that you took to actually go away and focus purely on their thoughts. Like, and maybe it's the culture that we live in. We're kind of, there's a bias towards like action, like let's just go and do some stuff. But I really like that idea of just interrogating the thought, understanding it, and then shortening the cycles of the negative thoughts so that with each repetition, it's getting shorter and shorter, right? And you're able to bounce back quicker. So that's, I need to see if there's something like that where I live, because that sounds like something that I would actually enjoy, because I spend a lot of time. So one of my practices in the morning is I just like quiet time. So, you know, I'm Christian. And so for me, that spirituality and that space just to center and, you know, in my case, connect to God, or in somebody else's case, just whatever higher power or spirituality that you practice, is the closest that I can get to what you're saying, because that also brings up things from, you know, my emotions, my subconscious, my anxieties, and I have that space to say, okay, here's what it is, and I'm aware of it, and I can either do a next right thing with it, or I can just let it pass because there's nothing to be done for now. So yeah, I like the idea of extending that into something more deliberate and seeing if that could accelerate the process of understanding one's thoughts.
And on this same topic, maybe we can dive into a quote of yours, which is kind of like your motto. You can talk about it, the title of the episode, but I love it. It's your limitations are an illusion. Explain to me, what is this concept? When did you come up with it, and what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so this was something, actually I can't take the full credit. I think it was something that I was speaking to one of my mentors, and I think it's something that, you know, as we were having this conversation, it's something that, you know how something just gets mentioned in the conversation? Oh, da 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 da. You know, because I realized that, you know, your limitations are an illusion. Da, 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 da. And I was just about to carry on going. And he said, hold on. Like, you said something really important there. And I realized that, you know, as we started to unpack it together, is one of the things that has shown up consistently in my life, and I think many people relate to this, it's not unique to me, is whenever, you know, I've set myself a challenge or something felt like really big to me, and then you go ahead and you do it, or you learn how to do it, or, you know, it could be, for example, you know, when I worked in corporate, you know, moving jobs felt like a really big deal. So it was like, oh, you know, I've applied for this new job, and, you know, it just feels like a really big deal. I really want the job. And I think, you know, I think I did the interview really well. And then now you're waiting. And it feels like if I get this job, this will be like the best thing in the world. Like, oh my God, like it's like winning the lottery, right? And then you get the job and you're like, oh, okay. It's just another job with its own, you know, challenges, things that you enjoy, things that you don't enjoy. But what I came to realize was, we tend to set these things up, these goals, on a pedestal, and they feel like limitations, like, oh, like, I'm not ready to apply for that senior position, or, you know, if you're looking for a relationship, I'm not ready to talk to that boy or that girl, or whatever. It feels like such a big, big deal, right? And then you get there and you're like, oh, okay, I did that. And I like that idea because it reminds me that I also have evidence of other big things that I've done that... or other things that I've done that I felt really big at the time. And when I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, like, yeah, I worked for that company. I worked for the other company. You know, I'm married, you know, I've got a kid now. These are all things that felt humongous at one point. And so for me, it's just that reminder of, you know, first of all, the things that we put on a pedestal are not normally as big as we make them out to be. And secondly, like, if you look back in your life, you have achieved, you have succeeded, you have grown in so many different ways. And that should actually be almost packaged and used as evidence to go for the next thing. And to be honest, when I really like boil down my message, whether I'm speaking about disability advocacy or whether I'm speaking about, you know, leadership and high performance, that's kind of what it boils down to. It's, you know, how can we package the evidence of our previous accomplishments and use it as momentum for the next thing? Because we all have it, big or small. You know, not all of us are going to win the Nobel Prize, but, you know, we all did something at school, or we all did something in the home today, or we all did something that we're secretly proud of that nobody knows about, right? And so how can I use that to give me a bit of momentum, a bit of confidence for the next one?
I want to try to read your mind a little deeper. and I want you to imagine you are faced with the next big thing. Okay, there's something that you are not feeling confident about. It's a very stretch goal. It's scary. It's, yeah, you're afraid to even dream about it. What's your mental process? How do you get yourself to attack this goal?
That's a great question. I would say, and this probably goes back to my planning process for my goals. So the approach that I use, and it's something that both me and my wife use, is, I guess you could call it like a one thing type of framework. I mean, there's that famous book by Carl Newport, I believe. The one thing
is a book by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. We actually had Gary on the podcast, and the one that you're talking about probably is Deep Work.
Oh, Deep Work. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, sometimes get those two, but I love those books.
They're great.
Yeah. And so the one thing for me is where we set, you know, like you say, a stretch goal. So going back a couple of years, you know, during the pandemic, one of our stretch goals, my wife and I, was, we said, you know what, we're going to get married and then we're going to move to America, right? And so, which is a big goal as it is, you know, at any time, you know, to get married and then to move to a different country, a different continent for us, is pretty big deal, especially when you don't really have any connections over there. It's just something that you wanted to experience and to try. And so yeah, we just set it as our goal for the year. And also what was unique about this year was it was 2020. So we set our goal beginning of 2020, not knowing that in March there was gonna be this, you know, huge pandemic thing that changes everything forever. But I think the way that we attacked it, and this is my mindset as well, is you take that big thing and you try and divide it into more bite-sized chunks, which is an approach that we've all heard. And I think dividing it into bite-sized chunks is something that we can all do, but I think the bigger challenge is avoiding distractions, you know, learning to say no to everything else almost, right? And so, you know, in that year, we knew we were going to get married. We were not even engaged yet at the time. So we said, okay, you know, in Q1, we're going to look at wedding venues. You know, we haven't even spoken to our family, anything like that. You know, we're just going to go look at wedding venues. If we find something that we like, we're not going to mess about. We're just going to book it. And that's what we did. At the same time, you know, I was looking into what are our options for emigrating to the US. You know, I'm not a US citizen. You know, I needed to find a path or a visa that would allow us to go there, and of course allow us to live and to work in the US. So I came across this visa, but the visa said, you need to be a person of extraordinary ability. And I was like, ooh, that sounds like a huge step up, because I looked at the other people who'd been awarded this visa. It was like Justin Bieber, Adele, you know, it was, yeah. And I was like, yeah, my
name
would
never be Winston. Yeah, of course, yeah. Justin Bieber, Winston, like, yeah, the same kind of
yeah,
crowd.
Winston,
yeah,
Justin Bieber, yeah, that just rolls off the tongue, right? So I thought, okay, cool. Again, this sounds really, really big. It sounds a little bit crazy. I should not be trying for this. But I thought, okay, what's the next thing I can do? I was recommended an immigration attorney in the U.S., and I said, okay, looks like he does free consultation. Let me just do the consultation. The worst thing you can do is say, come on, who do you think you are, Justin Bieber? Like, go away, right? So I have the consultation, and the guy, he looks into my background. He looks into, like, the work that I do as a speaker, and he says, actually, I think you might be able to come in as a speaker who advises companies on diversity and inclusion, because it looks like, you know, you've done TED Talks and you've got articles and all this other evidence that would really support your case. And I was like, wow, me and Justin Bieber, here we go. And so, you know, I'm not going to give you the blah, 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 but fast forward, you know, by the end of the year, we've taken these big actions, you know, so we broke it down to every quarter, every month, every week. And it required saying no to so many other projects, you know, saying no to, you know, coaching opportunities, you know, one-to-one coaching was something that we'd considered before, but we thought this is just going to take up too much of our time when we need to be planning a wedding and planning how to move to a different country. So I think for me, it's that those two ideas of breaking it down, which most people are good at, but also figuring out ways to just say no to everything else that does not align to the one thing.
You know, when I had a conversation with Jay Pappas on the co-author of The One Thing, obviously he would recommend you over and over again that you have to identify what's your one thing. And for the people listening who haven't read the book, there is a special focus question that they have, which is, what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else is easier or necessary?
Yes.
You identify the one thing. But then when I had a conversation with Jay, he said, Stoyan, that the hardest thing is protecting your commitments. When you say this is the one thing, how do you learn to set boundaries and say no to pretty much everything else, so you can fully focus on this one thing, whatever it is for you? In your case, it was me and Justin Bieber, you know, kind of
hanging out. Make
yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right, but whatever it is, right? It could be I wanna grow my speaking presence in the U.S. market. I mean, you've been kicking ass, right? Like going to events and stages, but again, it's a different ball game,
yeah.
Right? So that maybe that's the one thing, and if you say that's the one thing, then it's going to be much easier for you to make progress if you can fully focus on this one thing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And defending the one thing, and maybe we can talk about that. Maybe some practical ways that you can defend that. Because for me, that was the most challenging thing. So, and maybe I'll just share like one or two ideas from those goals that I mentioned. So like with us wanting to get married in 2020, it was wanting to get married quickly. So we hadn't even been together that long. I think we'd been together for about 3 months, but we just knew, I mean, we had a long friendship before that, before we got into a relationship. So we were just arriving at a place where we were sure about each other, and we just knew that, okay, this is a commitment that we want to make. And it also allows us to really start to build our lives together. So it kind of ticks the boxes of the one thing. It just makes everything else easier, and it just feels leveraged. And so I guess one of the ways we defended with that was, you know, and I remember the proposal. Maybe I'll tell you a quick story about the proposal. We hadn't really spoken to anyone of our family to kind of tell them what we were thinking, because we knew that if we invite these opinions too early, then people will say all the right things. They'll say, hey, you've been together just 3 months. What are you doing? Maybe you should get to know each other a bit longer. Oh, and you want to move to a different continent straight after that? Come on. Like, you guys are crazy. Like, you're doing too much. So we just trusted our instinct and trusted, you know, what we felt was the right thing for us. And so with the proposal, I remember I called my wife's dad, my father-in-law, the day before. And I said, he was supposed to be coming to lunch the next day with my family. And I said to him, oh, you know that lunch thing I invited you to? It's actually our engagement. So make sure you show up because, you know, me and your daughter, we're getting engaged tomorrow. I'd love for you to be there. But, you know, even if you're not there, this train is leaving tomorrow kind of thing. So I hope you're there. And so, you know, some people might say, okay, that's a bit, you know, maybe you didn't give them enough time to process everything. But for us, and also understanding family dynamics and how people are protective and how people want to, you know, give you time to think about big decisions because that's how they operate, we knew that that wouldn't work for us and our one thing. And so that's what happened. You know, they came the next day and, you know, my father-in-law wanted to talk about it and said, oh, are you sure you've given this enough thought? You know, maybe you should reconsider. And I was like, no, we're sure. She's sure as well. We're happy. And in the end, he was like, okay, fine. I give you my blessing. And so, you know, for us, that's one thing that I would say is really protecting the voices that you allow into that decision once you yourself have gone through a process of becoming sure, like really protect the voices and the sounds that can become echo chambers for something that pulls you in the opposite direction of your one thing.
Maybe here is a good place to mention the importance of allowing yourself to have pieces and space for thinking time. It's really difficult to come up with these realizations unless you create space in your calendar, your agenda to process and to think and to just reflect. And I wonder if you have any specific strategies yourself, like what do you do on a daily, on a weekly, on a monthly basis so you can think and strategize?
Yeah. So I guess with my planning process, I think the one thing is pretty much the philosophy that kind of flows through, whether it's at the annual level, the quarterly level, the monthly, the weekly, and the daily. So even for each day, I have, you know, my one thing for each day. And what I try to do is there should be a clear through line from what I'm doing today to what I want to be achieving in a year's time. And so if I look at, you know, my to-do list or what's on my calendar for today, one of the things that I really practice is like leverage no's. So, you know, if there's five things that I'm doing and only two of those things align with my one thing for the year, then I will either postpone the other three things to later in the week because I like to do the most important thing early in the week. Or I'll also just interrogate those other things and say, do I actually really need to do this at all? It could be a meeting that I said yes to 6 months ago, but now that it's here, I'm like, actually, no, that is so far off the direction that I'm going that I'm either going to delay it for another 6 months or just say, no, thank you. This is not for me at this time. I would say it's that alignment, and you should be able to see from your to-do list today align to where it takes you in a year's time.
Winston, I just want to, before we finish this conversation, to dive into a little bit of a different topic. I know you're yourself an entrepreneur, and you often work with entrepreneurs. You're setting up mastermind groups, you're mentoring, coaching them. What do you find are the biggest struggles and challenges of entrepreneurs, of founders, especially when it comes to limiting beliefs?
Yeah, you know what? A lot of the entrepreneurs that we have worked with in our masterclasses, they come in with problems that appear to be tactical, but actually behind it is problems that are more about, you know, mentality and, you know, beliefs that they have and the self-talk that they carry. So I'll give you an example. So, you know, some of the entrepreneurs that we worked with, they're actually, you know, older than me. So they're more my parents' age, people in their 50s and their 60s, right? And so one of the typical complaints that we'll get or the challenges that they'll present is, well, you know, in my generation, we didn't really use technology, right? So, you know, it'll be things like, okay, yeah, but there's so many systems that I need to learn. You know, this is why I feel like I'm not making progress in my business or whatever thing that I'm trying to launch. And then be like, okay, fine. You know, that's actually a very easy problem to solve. Like, you could either choose to learn the tool yourself, or we could even outsource that piece of work for you very, very cheaply. And then they're like, and then you can see the resistance now, because that was the excuse, right? And now I'm saying to you, you don't have to worry about MailChimp or Zapier or any other integration anymore. And they're saying, no, I need to learn it. I wanna invest the time to learn it. But you haven't learned it in the last 1 year, 2 years. So what makes you think that you're gonna wanna learn it now? So what we find is that people hide behind the tactical things when it's actually a mindset thing. And then when you dive into it, it's okay, you know, I'm not ready. I'm embarrassed to change my LinkedIn title because my boss at work is going to see that I'm doing something else, right? So now this is something to do with imposter syndrome. So a lot of the coaching calls that we have is actually speaking to people and discovering that they have imposter syndrome, they have negative self-talk, they're afraid of what their family, their friends are going to think. And I would say it's almost like an 80-20 split, where 80% of the work that we do is on the mindset side of things, and 20% is the tactical side, like which tool should I use to schedule my social media? Oh, like, yeah, just use this. And if you don't want to do it, here's a VA who can help you do it at a very affordable price. So yeah, that's what I've seen.
That's right, man. When you update the operational system, everything else falls in place. It might take a bit, but yep, it will fall in place eventually. And here is another question. What's your take on limiting beliefs? Maybe from your experience, you can maybe give an example even. How do we transform a belief that's limiting us? Like, a lot of people say, I'm just this way. You know, I was born this way, I was raised this way, and it's very difficult for me to, you know, I know it logically, but to change my belief system. How do we transform beliefs into more empowering ones?
Yeah, honestly, this is something that I think about a lot, and I think my view kind of keeps changing on this. I think where I've got to now is, if someone says to me, like, I've got this negative belief system, I know I should transform it, but I don't think I can because it's just the way I am, right? I think one of the first questions I would ask is, okay, are you happy with where you are in life? If you're happy with where you are in life, you know, whether it's in your business, relationship, your health, whatever, if you're happy, then you actually don't have to do anything, right? Like, you're good, just carry on. Because sometimes I think we're very quick to try and, you know, change things and, you know, try to do something different and force people to be like us. But not everyone's like me or you, Stoyan. So if you're happy with the results that you're getting, then by all means, carry on. My issue is when you're not happy with the results that you're getting, and at the same time, you don't want to do something different. Because it's inputs, outputs, right? You know this, you're a mathematician, Stoyan. Like, the equation has to balance. Like, if you're putting the same thing, you're gonna get the same output. And so for me, if you're now at a stage where you're prepared to, even just if we call it an experiment, you know, hold on to your belief. Your belief is your baby, fine. You've had this baby since you were little, right? And you wanna, you know, you feel attached to that. Fine. How about we call it an experiment where you try and do something different just this one time? And then, you know, if it doesn't feel like it's getting you to a more positive place, a more progressive place, please run back to what you're doing before, right? And so I think sometimes it's just language and kind of taking the stigma out of it having to be, I know this is episode 180, you know, making people avoid that feeling that they're doing a whole 180 in their life and actually feel like, okay, we're just going to run a little experiment. You know, how about you work on your business for 20 minutes a day. That's it. That's it. And do that this week and then see how you feel after that. And I think when we use that language of experimentation, it kind of lowers the barrier to entry. It makes it more accessible. And people are prepared to almost take that step knowing that, okay, I'm just going to try this out. But if it doesn't work, I've still got my, you know, the devil that I know over here, if that makes sense. So that's one approach that I've used, because I found that sometimes it's very hard when someone is in that mindset of, this is just who I am. It's not always easy to get them to do a complete U-turn. So you kind of have to frame it as an experiment or something that they get to try. And if it doesn't work, they can go back to what they know.
That's a great explanation, man. I was just thinking for an example, like an example could be a belief, right? Nobody from my family was ever an entrepreneur. So I probably will never be successful as one, because I don't have the genes, I don't have the background, the upbringing, right? Like, that could be a belief. Now, if you're happy with it, and you know, you work for a company, you're a family person, fine, great. I mean, but if you're the person who really wants to succeed as an entrepreneur and you hold on to this belief, I mean, the step number one, you got to be aware. Like, I think myself included, so many people haven't really deeply looked into what are the beliefs that are driving my behavior. Like, get it out of your head, put it on a piece of paper, and just, what are the beliefs that drive my behavior? What do I believe in? What is the algorithm, right? Because we make decisions based on the beliefs that we believe in about ourselves, about our environment, about the world. You know, Bulgarians, Eastern Europeans, there's a stereotypes in Western Europe that I'm a Bulgarian, so I should probably not be, you know, it's going to be harder for me.
Right.
Well, this is a belief. It's a belief. And is it empowering me to take action and to go where I want to go? It's not even about, is it true? Like, objectively, it's about, is that helping me?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I listen sometimes to The Diary of a CEO by Steve Bartlett, the podcast. And he talks about, you know, building self-awareness around, you know, are you being driven or are you being dragged by your beliefs? And I think that kind of came to my mind when you were speaking, because when we have these beliefs, like, you know, for example, I was born in this country, so it's going to be harder for me. That type of belief will drag you in a particular direction where, you know, you probably play it safe or you don't take the chances that you should, versus a belief of, okay, fine, this is my background, but I'm actually driven to do bigger, to do better, to, you know, to do more than my family did, my father, my uncle, whoever, you know, all of those people who are not entrepreneurs before, or maybe even all of those people who never went to school or university before, maybe I'll be the first one to go to university, right? And so that's something that drives you. It's a motivator. It's something that you're pursuing, as opposed to something that is dragging you. It's almost like if you imagine somebody's tying, like, I don't know, like a chain around your leg, and they're pulling you in this direction. You don't want to go there, but you just feel like, you know, your fate is almost sealed to go in that direction. And so for me, what feels empowering is to go after something that drives me, that I'm pursuing. And there's no guarantees that you're going to make it as an entrepreneur, or, you know, have a, you know, get a first class degree at university. But I think you learn a lot in that pursuit, and you grow, and, you know, you get closer to the best version of you, rather than someone who just played it safe and relived the life of their father or their grandfather, you know, or their great grandfather who were around, you know, 100 years ago. You know, there's no need to relive that life.
Yeah, that's true, man. And even if you don't succeed on your endeavor, when you were bold, when you acted from a place of strength, it just feels good. It just feels like, okay, I gave it my all. It didn't work out, but you know what? I made the decision, and you feel aligned. You actually build confidence.
Yeah.
Amazing, man. Winston, brother, it's been 64 minutes already. Crazy.
Oh, wow.
How we went there. But like, I just want for like a final sort of like wrap up of the whole episode to, if you can sort of like give a final closing message, what would be your message to the people out there listening right now that are maybe struggling, that don't believe in themselves, maybe have that some big dreams, but they feel like they have too many obstacles and it's really hard to get where they want to be. What would be your final message?
Yeah, maybe something that, you know, I would have needed like 5 years ago or 6 years ago when I was starting on my journey as a speaker and, you know, just generally in business for myself, is letting go of the need to be understood, because I feel like I had these ideas of, I want to be independent, I want to build something meaningful, I want to make an impact in the world. But one of the things that held me back the most was thinking, you know, is my family going to understand? Are my friends, all of whom are working in corporate jobs, are they going to understand? And so for me, it was really liberating, or it would have been really liberating, to just kind of let go of that need to be understood by people and just, like we were talking about, just pursue the thing that drives me. Because at the end of the day, as they say, you can't please everyone. And so, yeah, that need to be understood is something that we put a lot of value on. But if you boil it down, you know, is it really that important? You know, what your auntie who you see every Christmas thinks of you quitting your job to start your business, it's actually not that important. So yeah, letting go of that need to be understood.
Amazing, man. And finally, maybe there's people listening who are looking for speakers, who are looking for somebody to help them, you know, coaching them, mentoring them. Can you just with a few words share with us, how can you support people? How can people get in touch and how can you help them?
Yeah, the two things that I'm really passionate right now is around disability advocacy. So going into companies and, you know, I guess sharing ideas and best practices as to how they could support their communities or people with disabilities so that they can thrive and be the best versions of themselves. And then the other thing that I'm super passionate about is what we're talking about with entrepreneurs, you know, people who, especially people who are kind of transitioning from a corporate or a 9-to-5 career into being independent. And so the best place to find me for all of those things is probably my website, winstonclements.com. So if you start there, it's got all my social medias. Feel free to find me, drop me a direct message, and hopefully I'll be able to support you, even if it's just pointing you to a resource, you know, that might be beneficial for you as an individual or as a company.
Brother, you're an inspiration. I give you that. I mean, I'm so grateful for you. I just wanted to take this moment to say thank you for the incredible work that you do, the impact that you are creating, not just to the communities with disabilities, but to everybody, myself included, helping us to dream bigger, to act bold, and to crush all limitations on the way. So thank you so much, brother. It's been an honor having you again.
No, I appreciate your story, and thank you for creating this space for people to come and, you know, get access to this information. These are the conversations that, you know, 10, 20 years ago, these were had in private rooms, you know, where nobody had access. So I love that you're creating this space for people to, you know, freely access, you know, conversations like this that will hopefully help them and inspire them. And we learn a lot as well by talking to each other.
Absolutely. So if anybody listening enjoyed this episode, make sure to check out Productivity Mastery on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major platforms. I'm sure you'll find something that you can resonate with. And of course, every time somebody subscribes, helps us to bring even, you know, like people like Winston and other amazing people to the podcast. So thank you for the support and wishing everybody an amazing day. See you once again next time for another episode of Productivity Mastery. Ciao. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.